Good morning, everybody, and welcome on in. It is Fighter's Fury here on 790 The Ticket. Tobin here with you. As the next hour, we'll dive all over the world of mixed martial arts and boxing. Obviously, it has been a year, and it's been a year. It's been feels like a year. It's been a couple of weeks of slim pickings as far as the fights are concerned, as obviously COVID-19 has kind of shut everything down. So we are taping this at Chateau Tobin. I am doing this from my home studio, bringing you guys something on this Sunday morning. As we got the news this week that Johnny Bones Jones got in trouble with the law once again. He was arrested for DWI and what was it? It was negligent use of a firearm. Basically, the story is John Jones, there was a call in Albuquerque because somebody found a gun, heard a gunshot. They had found John Jones, and he was drunk as a skunk, bloodshot eyes, all that type of stuff. Failed a breathalyzer. He tested positive for twice the legal limit of alcohol in New Mexico. He failed a bevy of field sobriety tests. And then he was released early on Thursday after all that stuff went down. They had searched his car. They had found a gun. The gun matched the bullet that had been shot. And to put a little bit of a local twist, he had apparently had an open container in his car, which was a half-drunken bottle of mezcal, Jorge Masvidal's mezcal. Not like it didn't belong to Jorge Masvidal. I mean the mezcal that I think it's Recuerdo, I think is the brand. So he had been drinking that. So maybe doing that I know they have the same manager. Maybe doing some support that way. Maybe he got a courtesy bottle. I don't know. But he was partaking in Jorge Masvidal's beverage. Which is fun. I wonder if that's good. Is that good publicity or bad publicity for Jorge Masvidal that John Bones Jones was drinking your stuff? That's an interesting question because they always say. No publicity is bad publicity. I would feel like for Jorge, it's good to know that people are enjoying your product, maybe a little bit too much. I saw some people this week. There were some takes on John where they were like, it is such a shame that he's his own worst enemy and what a waste of talent he is and all that stuff. And the thing that I find most troubling about the John Jones thing is it's actually the opposite case. John Jones isn't a waste of talent. He's about as good a fight talent as there ever has been in any combat sport. I think the thing that you find sad about it, because this was my reaction to it. When I saw that John had tested positive, I keep saying tested positive. I'm just used to it with saying John. When I saw that John had gotten arrested for DWI, it was kind of just like a shoulder shrug. Like, man. Just another story in another chapter in the storybook of John Jones screw ups and legal mishaps, and I think the thing that's troubling about John and the level that he's gotten to is that if you're a fight fan and you've gotten to this point with John Jones, I'm so apathetic towards him screwing up with the law, and I think in a weird way. That's where it's most dangerous for John Jones. A lot of the times when he had the hit and run incident with the pregnancy, that was obviously the lowest of the low for him. Breaking a pregnant woman's arm because, you were hungover or tired or under the influence, whatever story he wanted to spin for people. He ran a red light, hit a woman's car, went back to grab drug paraphernalia and cash out of the car and then took off. And then there was a manhunt. I thought that would have been the wake-up call that he needed to stay away for a while, but it seems with John, all this stuff is just temporary, maybe that's just the sign of a guy who has a true alcohol problem and he really just can't kick it. And I don't say this insensitively because I've had people very close in my life who have dealt with alcoholism and dealt with addiction, and it's not an easy thing to kick. And I'm not trying to feel sorry for John Jones. I'm just trying to figure out why it is what it is with him, where it just doesn't seem like he can shake this demon. And it's not like he's even been that apologetic about it. Like, he's done interviews with ESPN where he's talked about, he's still having drinks every now and then. He really doesn't seem like a guy who's ever going to kick this habit of drinking that if he doesn't do a cold turkey. But the problem is, here's the thing that's upsetting about it, is that it's not even that he's drinking. I mean, plenty of fighters have drank a lot and obviously partake in a lot of extracurriculars. I'm not a person who's against people drinking. I'll probably, you know, I would say a couple times a month, probably have a bottle of wine on a Friday or Saturday night. So I'm not against drinking. Don't get me wrong. I'm against, you know, but he's got a chronic thing with drinking and driving, you know, and I'm sure the majority of people listening have probably had a couple too many drinks and maybe gotten behind the wheel of a car once, twice, maybe even gotten home and you thought, man, I probably shouldn't have done that. But you would think somebody who has not only the infractions that John has, but the profile that he has, knowing what that would be if he does get caught in that situation, you would think all that stuff would finally come to fruition where it's like, all right, I should probably find other means. And I don't know. It's like it's not going to stop unless it does end up with a dead body and it's him in a jail cell. And I don't mean to be so dramatic with that, but that's what it feels like it's going to take. Because if you get into a hit and run with a pregnant woman, you have to settle it for, imagine, a good bevy of money. What's it going to take to get that going? So I think that he's in this danger zone, not because it's only that he's doing something very dangerous to others and to himself. But I really felt like the collective reaction to John Jones getting a DWI this week was, yeah, well, what am I supposed to, you know, my reaction was, yeah, water is wet. You know, this is what the guy does. He drinks and he drives. He drinks and he drives and he gets in trouble. That's what John's career has been. And, you know, so but I did see people say, like, oh, what a waste of talent, what a shame he is, all this type of stuff. And I think the interesting part to the John Jones saga is that he's not a waste of talent, is that he's had all of these flaws and had all these things wrong with him and has had all of this turmoil out of the ring, has had his belt taken away, all of that stuff, positive steroid tests. They've had to move cards because he has pulsing steroids, all that type of stuff. It hasn't affected him. He's still the guy who's defended his title more than anybody ever in the history of the sport. And you think about how talented he is and how he's had all of this stuff go awry with his career. And you think about that and you're like, man, he's still been on top. Now, you know, I know people are going to start saying, well, Tobin, Dominic Cruz, the Thiago Santos. Yeah, those fights were closer. I'm not here to say that they weren't. But, you know, we've seen before with John's career where there's been a little bit of apathy when it's come to his opponent. You know, he's talked about wanting a real big game opponent to get him training the way he used to. Or I think that that's had something to do with it. I also think it's age. He's been doing this since he was 19 years old. So he's been doing it forever. So you think about all the things that have gone wrong personally with him, the turmoil that he's had, it really hasn't affected his professional career at all. And that is the thing that has been the most marveling when it's come to all of this. I guess you could kind of compare it to Floyd Mayweather. You know, but Floyd's one big infraction was the domestic violence stuff. Floyd's never had a real substance abuse problem. He's always kept himself in shape. It's probably why he's been able to elongate his career as long as he has. He became more popular on the second half of his career than he was in the first half of his career. So, you know, Floyd's a bit of an anomaly in that regard. You know, a lot of people, we were talking about this, that mentioned Mike Tyson. And Mike, you know, people were still fascinated and want to watch Mike. But, you know, Mike Tyson's turmoil in his career piled up. His career did go the other way. Oh, and that's what happens most of the time. A lot of the times when guys have these public things and these public demons come to light, and when they keep affecting guys, it does affect who they are in the ring, and it does affect who they are in the octagon. you know, maybe BJ Penn comes to mind with that stuff, with all the stuff he's been dealing with. And BJ's been a guy where if he doesn't have a fight, he can't seem to stay out of trouble at this point of his career. But with John, there really hasn't, you know, there from a results standpoint, there really hasn't been consequences for him behaving this way. Because, yeah, he lost his belt. And it was taken away, and then he lost his title because of a steroid test. But as far as the performances in the octagon, for the most part, the guy hasn't missed that much of a beat. He really, really hasn't. So that, I think, is what the dangerous part is with this. We're at a point where I think fans are a little bit apathetic towards, oh, John's getting in trouble, so I don't know that there's going to be this public cry for him to be punished. I don't really know what the UFC can do from a punishment standpoint. You know, they haven't, you know, they did with the whole hit and run thing. I don't know if they're going to with this. I don't feel like they are. They got, you know, and I think part of that probably has to do with, we're in this time now with a pandemic. I feel like he probably got it at this right time. Actually, coming to think of it, John's actually had some pretty good timing on these too, because I remember, at one point, I think it was with the steroid test, I believe it happened in the midst of McGregor Mayweather. So it was kind of swept under the rug. Here, he's in the unfortunate timing of there's no other sports going on, so it'll be a story. But also, it's a pandemic, so who cares if John Jones got a DWI? You know, it's going to be kind of by the wayside. The other thing is, it's not even the biggest story in UFC, because the biggest story right now is probably Dana White going forth with UFC 249 and Khabib versus Tony. You know, I'm taping this on Friday, so maybe Dana would have come out and said something by now. But I just felt like the initial reaction on Thursday when it had happened was pretty ho-hum. It was pretty ho-hum. And, okay, John's in trouble again. What else is new? And so, you know, this is the thing. I've always been a fan of John and his work in the ring. I think in the octagon, he's the best I've ever seen do it. You know, I'm with the steroid stuff, you know, I know that he came up in an era of TRT and all that type of stuff. He was fighting Vitor Belfort, who was juiced to the gills. All this type of stuff I felt like was pretty regular in the era that he came up in. So I don't get crazy about the stuff. My favorite baseball player who's not a Marlin is Barry Bonds. I know that Barry Bonds is juiced to the gills. I don't care. I know that there's a bit of a different stigma when it comes to performance enhancing drugs and fighting, but I do waffle with it sometimes, because I do think that some guys benefit from it from the standpoint of it gets them actually in the cage and they use it to get themselves more even than it does over the top. You know, but that's just me as a fan. I'm not a fighter, so I can understand why more fighters are upset about it than why some fans are. As far as he's concerned, I don't see the UFC doing anything. I don't think they're going to, unless he goes to jail. I mean, he just got off probation, I think, in January. If a judge finds that they want to be extra harsh at John Jones because of this, because it's just the last straw, they're in a small community in Albuquerque. Who knows how many times John's been let go with a warning. It's going to be a legacy where people probably should have thought of John Jones as the best to ever do it, and a guy who should have been making more headlines for being the best to ever do it. And unfortunately for him, he's going to be more remembered as a guy who can just never stay out of trouble. And I think that's going to be almost as big, if not a bigger part of his legacy than his greatness was. And there was never any wasted talent as far as the accomplishments that he put forth in that octagon. But I think it's going to be impossible not to tell the story of John Jones without thinking of, man, this guy was an absolute wreck outside the cage, an absolute wreck. So that's it was unfortunate to see this week, but I think it was also so unfortunate that I had such a nonchalant reaction to it. Like, yeah, that's the behavior I expect from John Jones. But if you were to tell me that he was fighting Stipe Miocic for the heavyweight championship of the world in 4 months, I would favor him. I'd watch, and I think he'd win. So I don't think it deters me from thinking he's got any worse of a shot from becoming heavyweight champion of the world or continuing to defend his light heavyweight championship, even if he doesn't look as dominant as he does, as he did, like he did against Dominic Cruz, where plenty of people thought that he lost that fight. Even with that being the case, he's still got the belt. He's still coming out on top, and I still think that he should be favored pretty much in any matchup that he takes on. We'll be back with more after this. Welcome back, everybody. It is Fighters Fury here on 790 The Ticket. Tobin here with you as we continue to get into some of the things in combat sports. Been a pretty quiet week. One of the big things that we've been awaiting, again, I am taping this on Friday. I don't want to mislead anybody. So if this news did come down on Sunday, you know, I'll probably update it in the podcast, but it might be airing on 790 The Ticket with the non-updated version of it. But we are still waiting that location for UFC 249, Habib versus Tony Ferguson. Dana White maintains that is happening amid the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, he's been a little bit flippant about it the entire time, you know, lashing out at media, calling him wimps for overgoing this. And he was going to go forth basically with these fight cards up until the president put the ramifications down to 10 people or less in an arena or in a venue all at one time. But they are going to do it. He said this week that he was 99.9% locked down. I saw the odds come out, and the odds had Florida as the odds on favorite to host UFC 249. Now, a couple of things don't make sense to me with this. One, obviously we're in one of the states where it's been dealt with, where we've been dealing with COVID-19 the most, especially in Broward County. There's been a lot of cases. The only reason I could really see why Florida is so heavily favored is because Florida was one of the last states to allow combat sports to occur. There was a fight card in Jacksonville, a boxing match, I believe. And so the commission let it go on. That would be the only reason why I could feel they believe Florida is one of the places that it was the odds on favorite. The other thing that didn't make sense is Habib went back to Russia. I can't imagine dudes going to Russia to finish his camp if he's going to go to Florida. It makes no sense in the world. Why would you go back to Russia to only come back to fight in Florida? It just doesn't make sense. Especially fight card, if it is going to go on in time, it's going to be in a couple weeks. So that didn't make sense to me to see Florida as a +200 favorite. Somebody said that the next favorite was U.S. Arab Emeritus. That was the one that Khabib's father said. It was said it was going to be in Dubai. So that makes sense for that. Russia's +400 after that. Mexico, which is still allowing events to go on. I can see that. Obviously, Tony Ferguson, Mexican-American. That'd be pretty cool. But again, I think the big tell was Khabib went back to Russia. So I imagine it's going to take place in either Russia or in Dubai, somewhere like that. That seems to make the most sense other than this Florida. It's just Florida jumped out on the page. I was like, what? That makes no sense. If he was still in America, I guess I could talk myself into it. Like, the Florida Commission did just let fighting go on. But now that it's not, I don't see it. So that's just something to keep in mind when if anybody's thinking about putting a wager down on the favorite Florida, probably shouldn't. The other big news that came out with this was that Dana White apparently plans to put big fights on this card. Like, this was, I'm trying to think, let's see if we could bring up the initial card as it is. But he apparently was saying that he wants to make this the biggest and baddest card there is. So he's going all in. He's doubling down. I think it's at this point kind of silly to fight what we were expecting with this card, and it's not going to happen. It seems like it's going to happen. You had Khabib taking on Tony as the main event. You had you have a great women's strawweight co-main event with Jessica Andrade versus Rose Namajunas, Thug Rose back in the at the cage. You got Calvin Kattar versus Jeremy Stephens, Islam Makhachev taking on Alexander Hernandez, Magomed Ankalaev taking on Ian Kutalaba, who's back in there. So it's a good card. I mean, make no mistake. It's a good card. There is apparently the leak is that he's going to put he hinted at this on Brett Okamoto's Instagram, I believe, that Francis Ngannou versus Jairzinho Rozenstruik could be added. That'd be an absolute great ad for these guys. I am curious how how everybody's getting there, if everybody's going to get there, if there's issues like that getting to Russia. I don't pretend to know what Russia's restrictions are. So I don't want to jump to conclusions in that regard, but he's gone to this into this portal here, Dana, that he is he's going to go all in with it as far as adding fights to it, making it the biggest and baddest card there is. And look, adding Jairzinho Rozenstruik and Francis Ngannou to this would be a crazy thing. But this was his quote. This is what he said. He said, I'm trying to see. It was something like he thinks like it's going to be the biggest in UFC history, which, I mean, it's a pretty crazy bold claim to make, especially with all the stuff that they've put on. I still don't understand why Florida is the favorite for it, but he's going to try and make this a big thing. Now, we were talking about this week, and I think the interesting thing about this for Dana's perspective is, the guy's always been an opportunist when it comes to his sport. He's been able to take it from, illegal in states to now it's partnered with Mickey Mouse, partnered with ESPN. So, he's proven a lot of people wrong in a lot of ways. I don't want to make it seem like they haven't done a ton. They have. But he does know, look, there is a thirst out there for sports, for live action. And that when it comes down to it, especially a guy in my room where I love this sport, I love combat sports, it'd be great to have a week talking about something that's actually going to occur. But it was interesting, I was comparing, we were comparing this to the NFL this past week, because the NFL is also kind of going in this same direction where they've unapologetically been all moving in the direction of they want things to be the same. They want the cards to go on. They want the draft to go on. They want the league year to go on. They want everything to start on time. And yet there's a murmuring around with the coaches and front office personnel of, hey, this pandemic, it'd probably be ideal if we could move the draft back a little bit. There's coaches that this came up from Bleacher Report, Mike Freeman, who's a good reporter. He's like, I'm hearing from coaches, like they're hearing from team doctors that, this could be something that lasts into the fall. So they're all thinking, maybe we're not going to have training camp till the fall. And so much so that you had Roger Goodell put out a memo that got leaked where it was like talking about this or talking against the plan of the draft could result in disciplinary action. And I found it strange because with the NFL, why does the NFL feel the need to be on schedule, on target with everything? They are the biggest show in town. They're not going to lose listeners or viewers or anything like that if they were to delay it. If anything, it'll probably only boost the ratings more because people will be thirsting for it. But I found it strange that they were so eager to press that narrative. With Dana, I kind of get it. Like, I don't necessarily, you guys have known, I've talked about this. I don't agree with it because I feel like Tony versus Khabib is the fans' fight. And I feel like it deserves a live audience. And it may seem like a small potatoes thing to a lot of people because who cares? It's going to have more pay-per-view buys as in the middle of this pandemic with all the world looking for new content to watch than it will be if it was just on when it was on. And I don't necessarily disagree with people on that. I think from a viewership standpoint, it probably will increase, especially if Dana White doubles down and makes this an absolute monster of a card to watch. But you have Conor McGregor, the face of your sport this week, coming out and basically reprimanding the country of Ireland, the president, all the leaders of the country to shut down. And he's even donating millions of dollars in hospital equipment, Don't forget, I believe Connor came out, and I wish I had this right. I'm sorry I don't have it in front of me, but it was either his aunt or grandmother who lost their life to coronavirus. And that was before it was even like crazy, especially over here in America. It's been going on in Europe a little bit more, but you know, UK has been very flippant about it. They were going to go on with UFC London with Tyron Woodley versus Leon Edwards. They're going to go off with it like it was normal. The fans and everything. Their prime minister got coronavirus this week, by the way. And so I don't disagree that it's going to get a lot of viewers. The thing is, with a fight like this that has been it's been so anticipated. They've been advertising the most anticipated fight in UFC history, which I agree with. It's the fifth attempt to make it happen. I just wish it had the full card of everything. Now, maybe they're going to have fans in Dubai. I don't know. I mean, I would doubt it because I think the UFC already knows they're under a little bit of heat for even doing the event. Even if Dana White says he doesn't care, he cares to some degree, because if he really didn't care, he would have just gone on and done the fights anyway, I feel like. But I do believe that the fight would have been better off with a live audience, because I feel like these guys, they have been working for this fight for a long time. The fans have wanted this fight for a long time. Why not do it with the people there? So from my standpoint, I wish it would have had that. But look, I we're all thirsting for watching some sports. That's for sure. And so it is going to be awesome to finally see those two square off. You just wish it was under better circumstances. But I can't imagine it's going to be in Florida. I think that's crazy talk. Crazy talk. We'll be back with more on Fighters Fury right after this. Welcome back, everybody. It is Fighters Fury here on 790 The Ticket. Tobin here with you. So there was big news as far as boxing was concerned this week in regards to postponement. And this one is a bit of a... I guess nothing is a shock in the midst of this pandemic. But what we talked about this last week with Peter Kahn, as far as what was going to be the boxing date that everybody kind of looked at as the start of the season again. When can we look to boxing and say things are going to be back to normal, things are going to be back on track? Because, you know, Canelo's getting pushed back. That's all these May fights are getting pushed back. And I happened to mention to him that I thought that, you know, the Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder card, that was a good place to circle to maybe seem like when things would get back. And we got news this week from Bob Arum, who told ESPN that the trilogy will not conclude on July 18th, that it is off the table until at least the fall. Clearly not going to be ready for July 18th, Bob Arum said to ESPN. We don't even know if the MGM is going to be open until then. And he says, you cannot guarantee that the fighters at that event would take place on that date. We cannot convince them or ourselves. So when are they going to train for it? It just made no sense. You just have to take a step back. How are you going to sell tickets? It's absolutely ridiculous to say the fight is on when people from Britain can't even get here. So everybody has to step back. Boxing is not isolated. It's part of what's happening in the world. So possibly the fight will be in early October. Now, first of all, well done by Bob Arum, because those are all sound things to say for a guy that I've not always been the biggest fan of. But that's pretty crazy, is it not? Because we're talking about, we were just talking about UFC 249 when it comes to Dana White. Dana White is going to be the face of charging forth, be the sport that tries to get everything done in the midst of things. And look, part of the reason I feel like Dana is trying to have this Khabib versus Tony fight happen is not only because he gets to pounce on being the only show in town, but also because this has been a cursed fight that they've tried to do multiple times. And now you finally are at the goal line of getting it to happen. And now you have a crisis on our hands, facing the world. But I think also part of the reason is they want to move along so they could try and get to the next Conor McGregor fight. They want Conor McGregor fighting for the championship. I think in their minds, they'd love to have it being against Nurmagomedov. But even if it was against Tony Ferguson, even if it wasn't against Tony Ferguson, even if they could just get to the Nurmagomedov rematch and have Tony fight Justin Gaethje, whatever. All that stuff considered, They're trying to have this fight happen so they can move along with the sport. And there's not many things in boxing with as much fervor to get to as getting an undisputed heavyweight champion. And the fact that Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury, you know, people want them on a collision course to finally fight each other. It doesn't happen until this Deontay Wilder-Tyson Fury fight goes down. It doesn't happen. And so for a couple of reasons, one, Deontay Wilder could come back. I don't think he will after what I saw. And I picked Deontay Wilder to win both fights. But, you know, after what we saw and, you know, the talk of the suit and all that stuff weighing him down, you really just don't feel like he's a guy mentally ready to take on Tyson Fury like that. That's neither here nor there. The point being is the heavyweight division can't move on now without those two fighting. And so you kind of look down the path and you're like, well, when are we going to get, let's say Tyson Fury does win the third fight. When do we get that trilogy fight with him and Anthony Joshua? It's probably if things are to go back to normal, best case scenario, we could say early 2020. And instead of what probably could have been, probably could have been like early 2021, excuse me. It probably could have been a late 2020, maybe end of the year card between those two. But look, there is a big difference. Fighters' purses, a big part of it is the gate. Not necessarily the case in UFC. You know, they could still get a lot of the money. They get usually their guarantee is what it is, other than the champions who are dealing with the pay-per-view split. And I think that the majority of the revenue for these fighters is going to come from the pay-per-view split when it comes to Tony versus Khabib. So I think that that's almost going to be a wash for them, where it may necessarily be for the promoters, the casinos, which aren't even functioning right now. And, you know, he makes a good point. You know, we're in this time right now where a lot of people are going to be struggling. You know, people are dealing with just having money for groceries, keeping the lights on. You have a lot of people in the service industry who are hurting right now. A lot of people in a lot of industries that are hurting right now. Like if you don't work for a grocery store and you don't work for, I would say, healthcare, you know, who's flourishing right now? You know, even in our own business, you know, the commercials that we read, the things we have, what are we advertising for these days? It's tough. It's a tough go out there for the entire world. And so you're going to talk about people being able to plan to travel across the world to come see a fight. It's a tough, tough sell on these people. You know, you want to feel like things are back to normal for a little bit. So, you know, I think as a fan of boxing, it's a bit sobering, because as we were talking about last week, you kind of looked to that and hoped maybe that'll be the goal date of when things go back to normal. You know, our president is saying that he wants it to be Easter, everything to be open back up at Easter. You don't want the cure to be worse than the disease. And, you know, when you're seeing things like this, it's kind of hard to believe that you're going to get to that point. So it was just interesting to me, because right now, Khabib versus Tony is the biggest thing that's scheduled in the UFC. They are going to go forth and wherever they're going to do it. But Deontay Wilder versus Tyson Fury is no doubt the biggest thing that they got going on in boxing, even with whoever Canelo is going to fight, Billy Joe Saunders or Triple G, the trilogy. You know, that's not there. They're already saying, like, you know, that's they're punting for the fall on that one. So, With reading that, it was a pretty interesting thing as far as, like, man, this is where we're at with it, huh? Like, we have we've gotten all the way to the point where we are canceling fights in July. It's a long time down the road, man, but it's understandable with how things have been going. Certainly with everything that's been going on with it. The thing that'll be interesting is, and I think the thing that's toughest about it, we were talking about this a little bit with Peter last week, is the training. You know, these guys are trying to, are trying to go about it and get themselves right. But, you know, there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears literally in a boxing gym that these guys are putting forth. And it's absolutely tough when you have, when you have to go to this. So right now they're setting the date for October 3rd. You know, we'll see what's what with that. We'll see what's what with getting to Anthony Joshua and his rescheduling of things. But it's going to be a while, man. Everything's kind of just put on pause. We're all just sitting and waiting for this thing to go, because like Dana White, Eddie Hearn was one of those guys who was very bold with, going to just try and do business as normal. And just, you don't get the feeling that's going to get there too much or anytime too soon when it comes to normalcy and the fight game, which is tough, man. Like, there's a ton of fights we're looking forward to. Canelo coming back. Teofimo Lopez versus Vasyl Lomachenko. We were talking about George Kambosos getting a chance to get himself in the mix for the winner of that fight. There's a lot of dominoes that fall here. And guys who aren't making Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury, they're all right. They made $25 million for their last fights a piece. You know, you got guys who are living in one bedroom apartments here in America trying to just make it. And if they don't fight, they don't get paid. You know, this isn't even like, you know, the NBA or any of those sports where the contracts are guaranteed and you bet your ass that they're not giving any money back to the television network. So they're going to do all they can to finagle and manipulate and mold and craft how they can get those fights to happen, or those games to happen rather, and be broadcast on television. But with fights, you know, if the fight doesn't happen, the fight doesn't happen. You know, these things are usually done fight by fight. Probably hurts people like DAZN. I mean, I'd imagine if anybody's feeling it the most, it's got to be DAZN, because their whole sports programming, especially in America, was built on boxing and getting people to watch the big fights that you were going to get. You know, you were going to get pay-per-view or premium cable-worthy fighters every single month, probably twice a month. So you're going to get your money's worth. You know, now that they're at this point where it's, what fights are there to watch? Are you going to watch just for what, the library of the old Golden Boy stuff? Yeah, not for me, man. I could go find that stuff on YouTube, not for nothing. It's not that hard. So I don't know what they do, because people were already wondering about what the future of DAZN was going to be. And they were going to roll out this whole international package and stuff like that. What do you show people? What do you do? ESPN Plus obviously has ESPN money. It has the backing of all that behind it. And ESPN's got documentaries and is going to have UFC seemingly. Bit of a different, and it's $5 a month. It ain't 20. And again, in these times where people are going to be penny pinching, I think, if you don't have relevant content to bring people, what do you have? I think that's going to be the thing that I think separates a lot of the content business. Who has the relevant stuff to bring? You know, who has something new to bring every single day? If you are a radio show host, a podcaster, you have day-to-day life that you could talk about and all that type of stuff. If you're determining, you know, am I going to spend, you know, another $15 a month on XYZ for a sport that's not coming back till August? Or am I going to spend my money on, you know, Netflix, which has Tiger King, which is awesome, coming out? You know, these are decisions people are going to make, because look, it's about the only thing you can do right now is sit at home and watch television or read. Reading's for suckers, though. I'm kidding. I know that people like reading. But, yeah, we're at this point right now where and I think part of this probably goes to why Dana White's pushing so hard, but people are pushing and are thirsting for content so much. But when your sport that's like your bread and butter, and that sport's gone, it'd be like if MLB Network wasn't owned by MLB, like let's just call it like the Baseball Network, right? But it wasn't, but their whole model was, We have people tuning in for baseball, subscribing to watch baseball, all that type of stuff. I think DAZN, one of their other sports, is baseball. You could do baseball whip-arounds there. They don't have baseball either. So that's certainly a challenge that they got to deal with, because that was the big appeal, is that you're paying $20 a month, or if maybe you did. Could you imagine if you spent the $100 a year subscription to DAZN and you got one AJ fight? That's what you paid for. And I know, look, there's other great fighters on DAZN. I like watching Mikey Garcia or Demetrius Andrade, but, you know, quite frankly, I was able to watch those guys probably on other networks for just the same, you know, for probably less, because I was probably paying, what, $12, $13 a month for Showtime or HBO or all that. So it's an interesting time, man. That's our Fighter Story for this week, everybody. We love you guys. Hope you're staying safe. I'll be back on Monday morning, of course, 6 to 10 a.m., myself and Leroy. It's been good to be back. We appreciate everybody at 7 Night Ticket and Entercom Miami getting us back up and running. I can't thank the engineering staff enough, and of course, our great producers, Dan Day, helping us out this week. We hope to get RTD back soon as well. We love you guys. Everybody stay safe out there. We'll keep it tuned. Of course, follow me on social media at Brendan_Tobin, and we'll be bringing you guys content there every day as well on Twitter, Instagram. Follow Tobin Show. Please subscribe, like on YouTube, Tobin Show, and you guys can get content there as well. So we'll bring that to you. And again, I've said it multiple times already in the last 2 minutes, but stay safe, everybody. Take care of each other as much as you can, but don't be close to one another unless you're like immediate family. All right. Don't be doing that to strangers. Yeah. So that's our show for today, everybody. We will talk to you guys tomorrow, 6 to 10 a.m., Monday through Friday. And that's it. Be well, everybody.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.